I prefer a pepper grinder over a gossip mill.
Dumbest. Bad.
Some say I stir the pot, but I know I just smoke it.
Oh. Wait, that was so good. Mine was like, it literally just came to me because I just rewatched Salt Lake. And I was like, oh, shout out Heather Gay for saying gossip milk because I just got my tagline. I was actually like a little nervous that I wasn't going to have a tag. That hasn't happened in a minute where I was like, well, I don't have one.
It was a good one.
Thank you. It was quality, but yours was better. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 360. I do feel like I just woke up, even though I quite literally did not. But I feel a little extra mellow today. And I feel like maybe spiritually I've smoked pot a little bit, possibly, potentially. Like, it's just like maybe a part of this morning's and this episode's personality. And so who better to just have like a chill, nice, you know, little bit of a deep dive. One of my favorite people. You know her as a writer, producer, host of the podcast Pot Psychology, owner of the phenomenal shop destination location du jour, pipedreams.fun. Welcome back to Andy's Girls, Tracy Morrissey. Tracy, how are you?
Thank you. I'm very well. I had a couple bites of cheesecake for a late breakfast.
Ooh.
I feel like Dolores' mom.
Wait a second. It's literally 11 o'clock in the morning.
I didn't have anything else to eat. I've been avoiding it for so long. It's been in my fridge just like tempting me. And so I was like, I just need something to settle my stomach real quick.
Hopefully not super long, though, because it is a cheese-based dessert.
Well,
right?
For me, a long time is about a day. If it's
okay,
living,
great.
If
okay,
it's
cool.
Like something like that and it's living in my fridge, I feel like my willpower is, that's a long time for me to go without doing anything about it.
Now, question for you, is it a cheesecake that you procured? Did you make it? Did it just get dropped off by the gods at Cheesecake HQ?
No, my boyfriend brought it over and I'm trying not to eat dairy, but it's like, it's one of these little minis. It's like,
oh, yeah,
these, I think they call them like little guys
cute.
Or something. It's like, it's
of
a junior's.
Course they do. I mean, that's the closest I'm gonna get to saying my boyfriend dropped off. I'll just be like, here's my little guy, but it's like literally a small plated dessert. When did this relationship begin? I don't know that I knew.
Oh.
you were in a committed sitch.
Yeah, like 3 years ago, but it's been off and on.
I just choked on my cinnamon spice tea when you said, I thought you were going to be like 4 months or something.
No.
You literally said 3 years ago.
No, we've been like, we were together and then we were long distance. He lived in Chicago and
we got together like
a couple months before COVID. And then it was long distance. He was in Chicago. It was really difficult. So we broke up like after like less than a year. And then he moved here. He moved onto my block just by coincidence.
What?
I know, it's so convenient.
Mean,
it's like the best thing. And then we started like hanging out again and as friends for like a year. And then like 6 months ago, we started back in for real, for real.
Wait a second. So this fucking guy moved from Chicago. He's your ex at that point and happened to move directly to your block. I mean, I know Manhattan Brooklyn, apologies, real estate is... It can be tough to find a spot, but like your literal, did he give you a heads up or did you just run into him one day?
No. I actually invited him out for sex and then he was like, oh, like a year, like 2 years ago or something. And he was like, maybe like a year and a half ago. And he came out and he ended up getting a job here the next day. He had a job interview. He just randomly got one. And so then he like packed up his stuff. And then his friend lives down the street. He has a whole house with a pool and everything. So he invited him to move in there. And that's just like a coincidence that he has a friend that like lives on my block. But I actually know a lot of the people on my block. And a lot of people are like friends from other areas of my life. So it's a very nice neighborhood.
you know what? That's so nice. I feel that way about like the local shopkeepers in my neighborhood. Like I'll go in and say hi to my frame guy, my, you know, dry cleaners, select baristas. But I take a lot of pride in the fact that I don't know anyone, any neighbor's names or interests and truly rarely personality types. It's one of my favorite things about living in my building. We truly do not want to know each other.
Oh, I know. I talk to everyone. And I have a dog that I walk, so I end up seeing all the dog people and we talk. And then there's just like all these like really old, very kind, sweet Italian people that have lived here their entire lives. Oh. And
I love that.
So nice. They've always been so nice to my daughter. They love her. So it's, yeah, it's like a friendly, it's a very nice friendly neighborhood, aside from the junkies and the crackheads that, you know, well, come by time to time.
Kind of vibe, right? Yeah. There's like it a little pizzazz spice there. Yeah, you want a little bit of a sparkle in New York City living. You know, I've actually been to your, I don't know why I'm saying actually, you know this, have been to your place of residence before. It's gorgeous. Like you are living your best life. It's fabulous.
Thank you.
You've got a fucking house. Like who has a goddamn house in New York City?
It's the perfect size for a single mom. It's like, it's just the perfect size for us, you know, me and Una.
Oh yeah. It's a big space though. It's nice. Yeah. Not overwhelmingly big, but like beautiful.
Thank you.
Comfortable.
Yeah.
Do you ever envision yourself leaving? I don't know how that would even work. Why would you
never,
want to?
Never, ever. And then I'd never be able to afford to buy something else. I can envision myself maybe getting like a place upstate as like a weekend place, but that's kind of far off in the distance for me, money-wise.
Do you remember, I don't remember how long ago we recorded this, but we were talking about it had to have been Sonia, right? We were gonna like go on a little go-see and check out her.
I was just thinking about that recently because I drove past her place and I was like, oh, and I was thinking about how like we pretended to be a lesbian couple when we called real estate
agent. I think you took the lead on that. You were like, you know what we should do? We should go on a goddamn. We never actually did it, but you did.
No, they wanted to look at my financials. But I mean, they could look at my financials and it would, I have good credit. I don't know if I could get like a $9 million mortgage, but I could, you know, make up some bullshit.
Do we know?
Is it still on the market?
I was about to say, like, it has to still be on the market. No disrespect to Sexy J, to Sonia Rita.
She's not going to be able to sell it. Sonia Sangria. There's going to be a housing crash. So the interest rates are crazy. She's never going to sell that place for that price anyway because it's next to a parking garage. So that's got to be so annoying.
The thing of it is next to a parking garage. I feel like she's changed the price of that fucking house so many goddamn times.
So many times.
But I don't understand why it hasn't sold. I know it's kind of outdated or whatever, but it's also like a nice spot on the Upper East Side. She has that beautiful garden space back. Like, why? What would it take, do you think, for her to be able to just get rid of it?
I think she has to do a total, like she has to put on a new roof. I think she probably has to install an entirely new HVAC system because people come in and then they, you know, they're going to look around and they're going to see like, oh, I have to do this and I have to rip out this flooring and I have to blah, blah, blah. And these tiles are all broken. Like just to do a kitchen is like at least $100,000. So you think like all these different spaces. I mean, the house is really big. I'm sure the elevator needs to be serviced. So she would be better off just like renting out rooms or something. She must have a basement there, right?
Well, she has that basement because that became a part of her, you know, one of her story arcs was like cleaning out the basement and seeing all of her daughter's toys. But the thing, it's odd that we're kind of talking about this because did you listen to Bethany's podcast, which just premiered,
I
think, like yesterday or the day before? I haven't either because hashtag self-care, and it seems like it's going to be a real tough journey to get through, just from what I'm hearing from people. But it's doing great.
What's the premise of, she's rewatching old episodes or she's watching the new shows?
Great question. So I think it's that she's talking about classic episodes. I don't think that they're specific to New York, but like, so for example, I believe that the premiere episode has guest Elizabeth Moss, who, you know, love.
She's getting good guests, Wow.
I know. Oh, well, that's the whole thing, is that like she's going to have like prestige people because she's so great. She meaning Bethany. So I guess they talked about like Scary Island. But during the course of that episode, and again, I haven't watched it. Apologies to Bethany Frankel. I'm sure she's absolutely devastated to hear that. But so I guess they're talking about whatever and maybe some casting stuff. And the premise, I guess, is that it's like a deeper dive into these moments and Bethany is sharing her perspective. And then there's, I think, some sort of specific lens over each episode, like Susie Orman's going to come on and they'll talk about financial stuff. But I don't know the Elizabeth Moss of it all. I think it's just like, you know, iconic guest and you're just talking, who is a proud Bravoholic, which is incredible. And they're talking about these moments. But anyway, Bethany apparently shares, because it hit the blogs, it hit the press, that she was the one who was able to save Sonia from potentially being fired, I think, in season 10. Like, producers had told her that Sonia wasn't, like, giving drama, and Bethany encouraged her one night to, like, be more expressive or explosive, and then Sonia was, and it was like, oh, my God, Sonia's job has been saved. And through the course of that, Bethany also described Tinsley as a part of it and said Tinsley's a nobody. And of course, both of those moments got a lot of attention for this premiere episode, which was going to get attention anyway. And Bethany took to social, we're recording this Friday morning, Bethany took to Instagram stories last night. I don't know if they're still there, but I watched them. And over the course of, no joke, a solid minute talking to camera, like literally four Instagram stories, did a Bethany Frankel non-apology to Tinsley, where you could tell she's gotten a lot of feedback from people being like, how can you call Tinsley Mortimer a nobody? She like literally had a Dior nail polish named after her. She was a huge socialite.
She's an it girl.
She was a huge it girl. And so Bethany's like, listen, I use the word nobody, but what I meant in that moment was like, you know, she was living with Sonia. And then Bethany's just kind of stammering, insert words. Yeah. I mean, that's me every 5 seconds, but like not knowing quite how she was going to drive this conversation. But obviously, Bethany felt like she was not going to say, I'm sorry. So she tags Tinsley. She tags Sonia. She's like, and with Sonia, you know, it was just like a way to help her, blah, blah, blah. But with the Tinsley thing, she was just like, you know, it was misinterpreted what I said. And when I used the term nobody, I actually just meant that, like, you know, she was like not kind of, she was kind of like not doing well. I didn't mean, when I said nobody, you guys misunderstood essentially what she was trying to say.
It's your fault.
it was absolutely the listener's fault for misunderstanding Bethany's intention. The woman who quite literally coined the phrase, I know it all. And you can't be, what is it? You can't act smart and stupid at the same time. Anyway, yes. Sonia took to, this is bananas. Bryce Sander posted this and I was screaming within 2 seconds. Sonia sent this to Bryce and said, this is Sonia's response. I love Bethany and she always has my back. That's for sure. However, the top executives, meaning not the producers on the ground, always told me that they could count on me to get epic material at the townhouse with hashtag Team Sonia. Whenever one of the other scenes had to be canceled, they never had to pay a fee to come to my house and use my elevator like they had to at apartment buildings. They said they could always get gold filming me, even just talking to my poodle, not even having to have a conversation with a person. I've always brought the comedy. In fact, that's why I've been doing a comedy tour, to connect with my fans nationwide through Sonia in Your City. I also had Hotels.com reach out to me for a collaboration at the townhouse. It was some kind of branding event showing people the house on tour. In addition, I've had several companies reach out to me to have tours at my townhouse, and people love that idea. Reaction was huge. I was very tempted. However, it's currently rented. I'm rarely there. It's usually rented. When we film Real Housewives of New York, First Wives, or whatever it's going to be called, I'll definitely be back in the townhouse for that because I know my fans love seeing it. They've said it through social what they want to see, from the basement to the garden to my bathroom to the apartment Luann stayed in on the fifth floor to the suite Tinsley stayed in. I can also say washing the lingerie in my bidet was one of the biggest memes ever for me. And also when I said I used to be classy and now I'm trashy to one of my interns in the bathroom on film, it was huge. That was, and it's like so connected to us talking about her apartment. I took a screenshot. I was not planning to read that in full.
I'm glad that you did. I wanted to hear it all. All right. So I have a question.
Please.
Season 10. Was that the season when Bethany like ripped into Sonia for the tipsy girl? Is that what Bethany meant by saving her on the show?
I truly couldn't tell you. The one thing, not one thing, I mean, there are many things, but one of the things I'm absolutely terrible at is remembering what happens in what number season. It's like truly not one of my niche shenanigans, but let me just do a quick little Google and see. Okay.
It's season 9.
Okay, got it. So this is Bethany Frankel told, or Page Six covered that what Bethany said during her debut episode. Years later, one of the producers, I will not say who, in the car said, "I think we have to let Sonia go," and that Sonia was being a disaster, was only focusing on her ongoing townhouse problems and various businesses. There was a scene at a restaurant called Cherry. I don't remember this, a sushi restaurant, where I just light a match about her and Tinsley. At that point, Morgan was maneuvering through her friendship with Tinsley and the whole who had moved in, like that whole thing of like, you didn't thank me and the Bergdorf Goodman gift card and stuff. And so Bethany continues, Tinsley started out living in Sonia's townhouse and was basically a nobody who had been arrested. That's where she said nobody. But up to that point, she had this rich guy sending flowers and Sonia's poor and bankrupt. Oh, my God. I said something to stir that up and it lit up Sonia and she launched in. She did not let go. That's an absolute fact. I have the receipts and said that Sonia resurrected herself.
Here, I'll say this.
Yeah.
Bethany can be a real bitter Betty about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Petty Betty. She's like, all right, so she's done this before about Rachel Zoe, where she like just says like that person was nothing and they only have their money because of their father. Like she tweeted about that, like, I honestly, it's like 10 years ago. It was so long ago.
Oh my God.
That's weird. It was really rude and she was like a total bitch about it, and she's like that about Tinsley, and it's like so like her, like, I don't know if it's like jealousy or envy or like I think it's resentment. Her resentment is like so strong for people like that. And it's like, Bethany, like, you had a rich father, like you have a famous dad. Like, it's the thing is that like, I don't appreciate, like, I'm not that into socialites. Like, I don't really care, but I'm not trying to be that. So like, it doesn't make me mad that there are people that exist that are socialites like that, because like, I want nothing to do with that world. And so I can watch it from afar and kind of like, you know, enjoy it as entertainment. I think Bethany has always been kind of like resentful of not having that, not getting like, you know. And the thing is, like, would she even want that? Would she want a rich husband or like to give her all her money? Would she want a rich father? She wouldn't. I don't think she would want that because she's very like driven. So,
well, I mean, at one point, I don't know if it was during that season or another one that Bethany said that Tinsley set back feminism 100 years.
Yeah. But who sets back feminism when it's like Bethany, when she's like fucking slut shaming Luann and, you know, ripping into Ramona and with her ageism on that? Like, I always thought that was kind of bullshit. Like, being a feminist isn't just like being good at business. It's not just like having a job, you know? It's like being kind to other, I mean, not necessarily being kind, but like not discriminating against women for things that you wouldn't discriminate against men. Like, I don't see like her saying anything about like men who are trying to look young. Maybe she has. I don't know. I've never heard it. I've heard her say a lot of things, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, it is, it's a interesting kind of journey for Bethany, you know, in terms of feminism. I've always thought that feminism is like quite literally just the definition of like men and women should be treated equally mm-hmm. under the law, and I'm sure in greater society as well. And so I think people sometimes confuse or conflate that with a woman being able to make the choice for herself of how she wants to live her life. It feels like Bethany has a lot of frustration and judgment over the choices that Tinsley has made of how to live her life. But the whole point to me of feminism is like, Tinsley has the right to make that choice. If Tinsley wants to be in a potentially traditional relationship, she has every right to make that decision and determination. And for her, her idea of her own womanhood and identity is, it's not up to Bethany to decide. But this gets into the larger issue with Bethany, because Bethany feels like she is an expert in everything. And the reason that Tinsley would succeed on the show, or Tinsley's identity, which predates Housewives in greater pop culture by well over a decade plus, like because Bethany doesn't have that history. She was on, you know, Martha's Apprentice, but nobody gives a shit about that. Like,
I've never even seen it.
I don't even remember if I did. But like for Bethany, maybe there's a little bit of a annoyance with the fact that Tinsley wasn't made from Housewives in the way that Bethany was. But that to me doesn't even make sense, because Bethany is such a huge, incredible historic example of monetizing Housewives in the way that she did. And yet the lessons that she's learned from that all seem to revolve around the idea that Bethany really truly does know it all, that she is the expert on everything, and people should thank her for their own success. And I think the confusion here is because Bethany has talked about how toxic Housewives is, how it hurt the idea of women succeeding, and how troubled the idea of doing that reality TV, how troubling that doing, continuing to do that kind of reality TV would be for her to now flip on that and try to monetize a Housewives podcast. But obviously she's like, while still holding on to, I think, some bitterness about her experience, resentment, or the continuation of, yeah, some resentment. It's like, it gets, it's kind of confusing, because she's going to have people on the show who I think love Housewives and obviously love her, but I don't know that she can separate the two. You know, does that make any sense? I don't know if that makes any sense.
I'll tell you this. Well, first of all, you know, obviously it's like, I'm not turning to Housewives for my feminism or anything like that. It's entertainment for me. But I do think that Housewives is really like one of the only places that you see women of this age, of a certain age, like living their lives. Like, that, there's not a lot of representation of that in other shows. But also what I'll say about Bethany is that she made a great underdog and a friggin' lousy top dog. Like, once she was on top, she wasn't so great. She kind of like was shitty. She was shitty, but always good for the show, I thought.
Yeah, it feels like to Bethany, the idea of being humble is a character flaw, except that I can't even really say that, because I think she assumes we all think of her as humble.
Because she was like ripping into Luann for like all the cabaret stuff and saying that she's drinking her own Kool-Aid or whatever it was, which is like, that's pretty rich. Talk about the pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah, I mean, she literally, Bethany only wears the colors black, white, and red when she's filming Housewives, because they match with her company logo. But for Bethany, it's like the idea of making fun of Ramona for coming out with a different business every hour. Ramona's like the New York One weather alert of small businesses, in that she's like constantly coming out with one. But like,
you throw a lot of darts at the board, you know, like you throw a lot of shit at the wall to see what's going to stick, what's going to fly. Like Bethany did that. You know, she started the whole thing with Bethany Bakes. And it was supposed to be like vegan baked goods.
Yeah.
And that wasn't mm-hmm. really working. And then she found her real success with Skinny Girl. So it's like you have to do a bunch of shit until you find out what's the thing that's going to work. You know, maybe True Faith or True whatever it was that Ramona was doing. Maybe it wasn't selling. Although I thought Ramona Wine was doing well and then they stopped selling it. I don't know why.
Yeah, I think that I don't know how well it was doing. I think it was like, it's one of those things of like, I don't know if this ever really monetized. I've tried it and it was really fun to try, but like.
Yeah, I never even got to taste it.
Yeah, it was, I can't believe that it wasn't a bigger thing because that was a genuinely super smart idea. It was.
I think that was also a little too early. Like that was pre like Instagram, right? It was like pre like mm-hmm. direct to consumer type shit where like you could be an mm-hmm. influencer and you can sell your things directly to people who follow you. I always think about that. I think about like how like early housewives like Alexis, Bellino and people like that mm-hmm. really missed out on that kind of thing, that like sort of revenue stream. Oh, Alexis, love, love, love how supportive she's been of her son. And yes. I loved her. It actually was perfect. I'm shocked. I am shocked at how like well she's doing with this. And like her Instagram where she discusses it was so mm-hmm. perfect because she just repeatedly said over and over, my son, my son, my son, my son is this, my son is this. And it was really like, it was really affirming. And I thought that was like so great.
Yeah, I mean, there's an idea here of growth, which can happen in real life and is always the goal for people that over time, and it doesn't have to be through a political lens, but really through like a humanist one, that people potentially have the capacity to grow. And what's unfortunate is because we watch them through the lens of very specific narrative reality TV, you know, during a time in Alexis's life when she was in a difficult marriage and trying to kind of break out of a role, to see the way that she has changed and evolved with time, either because of time and circumstance and also because of the way that her family has changed and adapted following her divorce. It's like, it's incredible to see. She put up an Instagram post introducing her son essentially to the world, who is a child living a trans experience. Yeah. And it was incredibly beautiful and mm-hmm. emotional and lovely. And it's, I think to a lot of people, it was surprising in the best way to see a woman who was communicating so beautifully the love of her child and hopes for her child and protection of her child in a way that was wonderful. And it was a beautiful surprise, I think, to a lot of people that was received really well, as it should be.
How old are those kids, the twins?
I have no idea. I want to say like in the 12 to 14-ish.
Yeah. And that's pretty young.
She had twins and then an older child. Yeah. So I think it's one of the twins.
Yeah, it's one of the twins. I think the older one, the older one is really good looking. I think he's like, he's going to be hot. I think.
The way you just shrug and you're like, he's going to be hot. He's just,
it's
he's going to be
what it
hot.
Is. It's like, I'm just stating the facts. I think, and that's like for like 13, 14, that's really young. Like a lot of parents would just dismiss like what their 13 or 14 year old is saying. Cause they're like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You'll grow out of this. You'll blah, blah, blah. And it just really shows how much she like listened to her kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds great. Like listened to her kid for a number of years. I mean, this is mm-hmm. a process that the family had been going through, I think, for a significant period of time. So for her to listen to her child in that way and really provide for her child in having a loving environment for however long, you know, this family transition has been taking place says a lot about her. But it's kind of, I think, the goal that a lot of people have in their lives, which is the idea that like, wow, I can look back on how I thought of the world before and how I think of the world now. And sometimes that happens with personal circumstance, that sometimes it happens with professional challenges, whatever it is, and just be like, wow, I'm in a different spot than I was before, but there's something beautiful in seeing the world as I see it now. And I look at the way Bethany views the world, and it's like, it feels like her world has become so small.
Cynical.
And, you know, for someone who's obviously talks so much shit about housewives as she's moved on to other failed businesses. And, you know, her HBO Max show was a fucking shit show. To see Bethany now try to take ownership of talking about housewives because she's gotten a lot of listens and is now saying, I own this space. I'm so smart for thinking of this idea, which is a boiled over version of what has been done for many years by other people, albeit those who don't have housewives on their resume. It's like kind of the opposite, you know, for someone who does so much good work so much charity work. Her own personal view and landscape of housewives, it's just kind of gotten so micro.
You know, I'm going to bring up this book. It was Rosie O'Donnell wrote this book, and I have to tell you, I couldn't recommend it more. I loved it so much. She wrote it in like while her show was still on, the Rosie show, and she had already come out and stuff, and she got this book deal, and they like it is artful. Like she writes about a weird story of because she's got, was very involved in charity, like Bethany, like hands-on involved in in foundations and programs and like helping people personally, visiting people, you know, doing that kind of thing. Wait, let me find the name of this book because I loved it so much. It's such a fast read that you wouldn't even, and it's, she tells her biography of herself, but it's like woven into this like other kind of like mystery where she's like, trying to help like a 14-year-old pregnant girl living in like the West Coast. And it's just Find Me, it's called. It's so good. And anyway, so she talks about her philanthropy and the work that she was doing. And she's so frank about it. She was like, you know, that was just an extension of my ego. She was like, I wanted more accolades than I was already getting. It was all like, and she's like, yeah, it's like, and it manifests itself in like a good way when I do that kind of stuff, but it is still just me like being invested in myself and my own ego. And I thought that was like really like bold to say and really like my long COVID, I can't think of words anymore. It's been really hard.
Trust me, I had a brain episode in May, and there have been times where I'm recording Andy's Girls that the listeners don't know that happened because God bless an edit where I have to stop. And I'm like, there was an episode that I did where there was dead air for I think like at least 45 seconds, if not more, because I couldn't think of the word that I wanted to say, which was so devastatingly painful. So I get it. But I hear you on what you're saying. And I also think like, you know, Bethany is someone who's done so much charity and created so much incredible, enormous goodwill. And it's just so unfortunate she can't be more charitable toward the people she worked with on Housewives and also to the idea of the Housewives community. It feels like the only ways that she will celebrate Housewives are when she herself is being celebrated. Oftentimes by herself, like literally creating the universe, which is to me a little different from how other housewives who you might also describe as being somewhat self-absorbed even think of their time. For Bethany, it's like she has to remind people of how good she is, and I don't want to take that away from her, but I also think like, but who are you now? Like, you make fun of these women.
Yeah.
You had a lot to say about Sonia living in the past, your idea of Tinsley's values being from the past, but like, how are you operating now? It doesn't feel like you're creating something new. You're allowing yourself to be seen as a housewife, that thing you seem to have a lot of bitterness about. Some of it understandable, I'm sure, but like, the other part of that is the lack of understanding or nuance or depth even to the world of like podcasting, into the world of the ways that people talk about housewives, is so small-minded that it's like, it's hard to try to understand Bethany's success as being anything other than numbers. Because even the way that she's talking about these her cast members on the show, it feels very small.
Mm-hmm. You know what I think about all the time?
Tell me.
Is that Ramona was right on the Brooklyn Bridge. She really was. She fucking called it. Like, the thing is that Ramona says things that are extremely hurtful, but they're hurtful because there's a truth in it, you know? And that's exactly what she did. It seems like Bethany just like cuts people out of her life like it's no big deal. And I'm sure that it's because of the way that she was raised. I'm sure I've said this on your show before, but I would love, love, love if she would come back to the show and then go to couples therapy with her mother. That is what
needs to happen.
She'll never heal unless she heals her relationship with her mother, because right now she's setting an example for her daughter that daughters can stop talking to their moms if they don't like what their moms are doing. And that's not a great example to set. Like, she should be setting an example of, like, you know, if she really wants Bryn to, and they seem like they have a great relationship, whatever. The teen years haven't hit yet, I don't think. To make it seem like it's okay to just stop talking to your mom, like, Bryn is taking that in, whether Bethany wants her to or not.
Okay, I hear you. And I am not a parent, but shout out to my fish son, PK, love of my life. But I kind of have a little bit of a counter to that, which is like, if someone is in your life who is incredibly toxic, potentially emotionally abusive, and Bethany experienced, I think, a significant amount of trauma as a child, if her mom doesn't respect her relationship enough to have boundaries where there can be some sort of glimmer of safety in having a relationship with her, why should Bethany be open to that? Like, having a child doesn't preclude you from wanting to have to create boundaries with emotional safety. If her mom is not, if having a relationship with her mom is just allowing toxicity to run rampant, why? I think sometimes saying goodbye is like the most loving thing that you can do from a child, as a child to a parent, to protect even Bryn's own understanding of mother-daughter relationships. I would argue that like Bethany not having a relationship with her mom is an example to Bryn of wanting to create a loving environment for her.
I don't know.
Don't you think? I mean, like, if her mom's a piece of shit, like, I don't think that Bethany should have to have a relationship with her mom because it's her mom. If there is no possibility here for any kind of like healthy vibe, and Bethany has tried to reach out to her mom as an adult and has talked about it. Like, there was a point where Bryn said, "I want to meet grandma." And Bethany was like, "Okay, like, I'm open to it."
But then Bethany decided
she too much.
She didn't want to, right?
Because her mom was talking to the press about what a piece of shit she was. And Bethany was like, "Okay, I tried to open the door, but now there's a lot to me to like criticize about Bethany when it comes to being isolationist, because I think the co-parenting stuff is really tough.
She did the same thing to Jason. If it were up to her, Jason would be out of her life forever and out of Bryn's life forever. I don't think that she thinks that the hate that those people have for each other is so much greater than the love that they have for their kid. And that's really fucked up. That's like so upside down. Listen, I'm a co-parent with someone that I fucking can't stand. Like, I don't want to have to be tied to him forever, but I realize how important he's like a key figure in my daughter's life. It's very, very important that he's there and that I communicate with him, because otherwise she can, you know, just, you know, play us off of each other, which I'm sure Bryn will end up doing when she's a teenager in Manhattan. Are you kidding me? So I don't know, just because we've seen Bethany do it so many times before that I just like, even if it's just even if it weren't just her mom, like, it's Bethany does it to like everybody. So her kid sees these people come in and out of her life, you know, and she X's people out.
Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening,
I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this. Violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon.
The thing about Jason is that I have read a lot of, as I'm sure you have, a lot of the coverage of their bajillion years long custody battle that
They're still not divorced, right?
I think the custody stuff only recently sort of wrapped because Jason acknowledged that, I think it was something along the lines of like, Brynn is making a choice at this point. And there was so much that was revealed that I feel like I shouldn't even know about Brynn's anxiety as a result of this like ongoing years long battle between her parents. And I think that Bethany at this point has like full primary custody. I don't know Brynn's relationship with her dad, which is very unfortunate. But I do remember at one point they're like court ordered. I'm going to fuck this up. I'm going to say like some sort of like custody mediator or something.
Yeah, I remember that.
Addressed the court, right? And said like, I've done this work for 20 years and it's like the only time I've ever quit. Because he said it was so difficult to break through to both parents. And I think toward the end of it, this person, this like expert was like, listen, I was like sort of able to get through the mom. I wasn't at all able to get through the dad. And it is to me the like, there is a dream version of, to me, the idea of truly loving your child enough to find a way to co-parent. But sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. And I don't know that Bethany could ever take responsibility for her part in that. But I also think it's like, I don't know, to me as a complete outsider to parenting, I would think the hope would be to find a way to ensure that your child has a relationship with both parents. It's like something that Tamara Judge talked a lot about.
Yeah.
Right. Like what was that thing called? It's like separation, something or other.
Parental alienation.
Something. Yes.
And there are people who claim that parental alienation isn't real. It's a real thing. It happens to sure women and men. I think that Bethany, like, I just read up, she got full legal and primary custody and she no longer, I think she didn't want to have to pay him child support. I think that was a big fucking issue. Like, it chapped her ass that she had to give him money. And it would do that to me too. I would fucking hate that. But at the same time, it's like, you don't want your kid to be in your $5 million Tribeca penthouse 50% of the time and then go to, I don't know, like a railroad apartment in Brooklyn. Like you want your kid to like have like some stability and consistency, you know what I mean? But I just also think for the most part, like the fact that these two people were so evil to each other that and you know, divorce just brings out the worst in people. It really does. And it makes you act so much worse than you really are. It just is like brings out the absolute like worst features of your personality. And it makes you kind of crazy. But I also do think that water seeks its own level. And that's why they found each other, you know?
Wow. That took me back. Oh, my God. Water seeking its own level in that.
Yeah,
I think that sometimes divorce can change and also reveal a person. And it just makes me, at the end of the day, I just feel honestly so sad for Brynn. And my hope is that if this is the best, you know, call for her and journey for her, I hope that she does have a healthy, positive relationship with her dad. Like, who knows? Hopefully they communicate in some way. If that's the right choice for her, I think the sadness of how awful and ugly that battle got is the knowledge that as a Bravo fan can find out really terrible, ugly details about their battle, their kid will too. And it's like, the hope is, I don't know how that changes when it's like a celebrity going through a custody battle and you can find that information so publicly. And a lot of that information is also being guided by the parent who can afford to have a crisis comms team and a publicist. And the way that even her narrative is shown, but his is not, like the alienation from a fame celebrity level and how I'm even interpreting what happened, I think is really unbalanced and unfortunate. But I don't know, man. It's like, it's the dumbest thing I can say, but the thing that I feel the most, which is like, I really wish them the best from that, because I just think to come out of that as the kid, I hope that she's able to have a relationship with both parents if that's the healthiest move for her, you know, like if that's,
well,
I don't know.
That's what I was saying. It would be a lot easier for Brynn, like, to, like, she might change her mind when she gets older and she might see things really differently and be like, oh, my mom pushed my dad out and, oh, my mom did this and blah, blah, blah. And then she might have resentment against Bethany and then might want to cut off communication with her at that point. And that's what I'm saying is, like, that's why you need to fix shit, the foundation of your stuff, before you continue to go. Because, like, it doesn't even seem like Bethany had any closure. Like, I'm sure that there is nothing ever healthy about the communication between her and her mother. Like, that she probably needs a mediator for that relationship. So, I don't know. That's my two cents. I feel like, you know, I had difficult problems with my mom for a while. And I was like, I need to fix this because I don't want that to be the example that I show my daughter, that, like, it's okay to, like, you know, just X your mom out.
I completely agree. And I also think something that my psychiatrist says to me a lot is, like, your mom knows how to push your buttons because she created them.
Yeah.
And there is that kind of like,
totally.
I did therapy with my mom a single time, maybe 4 years ago. It went so well that we'll never do it ever again. But you know, there is also the idea of, like, at a certain point, there, as a way to develop, I would think, and people who actually have experience in this were like, what the fuck, shut the fuck up, Sarah, don't talk about this. But, like, the way that we sometimes push away our parents is the ability for us to grow and become human, independent, mature adult people. Like, there is
that happens in your 20s and stuff, but not in your 50s.
Well, no, I think it also depends on when you've experienced trauma, because I think if you experience trauma as a child, sometimes your reaction to things as an adult will revert back to that childhood self. And I think with Bethany, maybe some of her reactions to things as an adult are probably connected to the trauma she experienced as a child. That being said, like, I don't know that closure exists for people, but I do think that when it comes to healing and the opportunity to heal, she could certainly work on that in her own journey without the presence of her mom, because at a certain point, your mom is always present. Even if you don't have an experience or a relationship with your mom as an adult, even if you have an alienated, totally separate, they're cut out the likelihood is strong that you still have a relationship with your mom, especially if you've been through trauma. You carry that with you. And some people can call it baggage or burden. I think of it as just honestly history at the end of the day. And so hopefully she's worked through that or is working through it. I think, you know, Bethany is an expert in some ways on certain things I would never take away from her, but she's also almost a little bit of a warning in others of like, this is what happens when, I don't know, this is what happens when you've completely disconnected. And for a woman who was so grounding to so many of us, who I loved for a number of years, it is tough
as the
to
underdog
see her as she is now. Yeah, because she is, as you said, it's like the top dog underdog. It is her constantly having to remind us that she's so good at this. And it's unfortunate there's no capacity for growth in other ways. But, you know, maybe she'll change. Who knows? Listen, we've talked about Bethany Frankel for a fucking hour.
I really want to talk about Lisa Barlow.
Can we talk about Lisa Barlow? Let's shift gears.
Yes, because I have questions.
Let's talk.
All right. I have seen every single episode of Salt Lake City at, you know, this season, all the seasons, whatever. I've watched some of the episodes a couple times over. I am very, very confused about the fight about Heather's dead father and Lisa. I don't get it. I don't think they've done a very good job explaining like what the hell's going on. Like, so Lisa tweeted something that was proof of something. Did Heather really lie? I have no idea what's going on, and I'm never usually at this kind of a loss when I'm watching this show. You know what I mean? Do you know? Do you understand it?
So from my limited understanding from what has been communicated, I think, through the show, Heather said during the most recent reunion that Lisa wasn't there for her. And as an example of Lisa being superficial and disconnected from what Heather experienced, Heather said, well, Lisa was like, hope your dad's feeling better, essentially saying she was communicating through text in a flippant way that without any understanding of the gravity of the situation, that she was just kind of half-assing, I hope your dad feels better, after her father had passed. And Lisa said, I didn't say that. Right. So then Lisa tweeted receipts showing that she had actually said, you know, like, hope your dad's feeling better, whatever it was, while he was still alive, and shared an obituary of her dad's passing to just say, like, listen, you spoke ill of me. You tried to characterize me in a different way. Here's proof of that. Heather is now saying that because a cousin reached out to her after this became a part of the conversation and said, I don't want our family to kind of be involved in this. Heather seems to be saying that Lisa's responsible for whatever rift has taken place, which stemmed from Heather bringing this stuff up at the reunion. But at the end of the day, essentially,
so Heather did lie.
I don't know that it's lying. I think Heather was wrong. And Heather's now saying, listen, I was wrong about the dates, but what is upsetting to me is that you don't seem to care about the pain behind that. And Lisa's saying, essentially, what I care about is the fact that you're calling me a piece of shit, and I'm just trying to reset by just countering what you said on national TV.
Yeah, okay. All right, now I get it. Thank you. And so now is Whitney, and now Whitney is on Lisa's side or no? Whitney just kind of sees both sides. Like Chanel?
Well, the interesting thing to me about this dynamic is that it feels like Heather is now in Lisa's position when it comes to Whitney, because it feels to me a little bit like, I don't know, Heather feels like this person is trying to characterize me in a certain way and I'm pushing back on that with what I feel are the facts, which to me is like the flip side of what's been going on with Lisa. Like, Heather was in a certain role with Lisa, and it feels like with Whitney, the tables have turned a little bit. Do you think?
Wait, repeat it?
Okay. It feels like to me a little bit like with the dynamics with Lisa, Heather is sharing information that might be a surprise to Lisa, and mm-hmm. she's upset at the way that Lisa reacted to it, which feels like a slap in the face.
Okay.
And with the Whitney dynamic, it feels like Heather is now in Lisa's position, where Whitney is sharing information that Heather may not have known. And as a result of that, she's upset at the way that Whitney seems to be characterizing their friendship. I okay. personally happen to be on Lisa and Whitney's side.
I'm thinking I am too.
Right? But like in examining how Heather feels, I wonder if Heather could ever, and maybe it'll come to being at the reunion, that Heather would ever understand that like in the way that she's pushing back on Whitney, she's sort of supporting what Lisa previously said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes. But here's the thing, too. All right. So yeah. Angie, what's her name? Angie with the H.
Harrington.
Angie Harrington.
Hate her. Hate her.
Oh, my God. She's a great person to hate. Do you think she's that actually...
She's such a good villain.
Do you think she did Shaw Exposed and her husband just took the brunt of it, like, for her so that she could, like, be around those women? Like, he's just being, her white knight or whatever?
I don't know. I think they're honestly both such trash that, like, yeah. I could see him being like, this is a funny idea, and her being like, go for it. I think if there was a way to show receipts that she was liking all of Shaw Exposed stuff, that would be interesting, because one of the other friends of, I think, did note that during the most recent episode that, like, 30 she seconds liked after it. She was yeah. liking it. Which for an account that had at that point 200 followers, we're all pretending this was like a big fucking thing.
But Shaw Exposed, that doesn't look great. Shaw Exposed is the account that released the recordings, right? Or no?
No.
The recordings of her screaming?
Totally different.
That account?
Yeah. I don't remember. And I feel like that was related also to someone who like used to work for her or something.
Yeah.
Who was maybe. This is just like a random fucking, at that point, 200 follower account. That chose a handle, I guess, to get attention that wasn't successful until it was discovered who was behind it.
They're turning it into like a whole thing now. Okay, so then about the Utah Jazz. So when they went to Arizona, Whitney was talking mm-hmm. to Heather, and Whitney, like, this is what was confusing to me. Whitney was like, yeah, and Meredith was like, we were talking about how there are these rumors that Lisa has been with someone, and Heather looked surprised. She was like, oh my God, really? Like, she was like excited to hear it, but then also surprised. So then it was weird when Whitney was like, you were there when I was told, blah, blah, blah. So is that just like a weird production thing where they were like, okay, Whitney, you go tell Heather about this. And then, you know, because they already knew about it beforehand and they were just pretending she didn't know. Like, what's going on with that? And the fact that Angie said that she never said that, I think, is bullshit. Whitney definitely I don't think Whitney would have repeated it unless she heard it.
I think this whole idea of Angie Harrington's selective memory when it comes to her husband's stuff and break. Also Utah Jazz is like very consistent for a woman who is quite literal trash. But yeah, with the Whitney thing, I think at one point Heather essentially said, I chose not to hear it, which is like, if I heard it, you know, I was blitzed out of my mind. And like, if I heard it or chose not to hear it, I think there is a little bit of a gray area there. But mm-hmm. it does then also contradict Angie Harrington's experience, which is like, we never said anything about that. Okay, so like, maybe we intimated something and Whitney's a dum-dum, so like, maybe when I said like sucking dick, she heard blowjob, and what I actually meant was like reading the Bible. Like, there is some sort of gaslighting, I think, over Whitney's yes. intelligence yeah, that both yeah. of these women, both Heather and Angie, seem to be focused on exacerbating, which doesn't to me line up with like what Whitney is actually quite literally saying.
It's really weird to me that Heather is buddying up with Angie.
How so? Don't you think that's kind of in line with her as someone who's very close to Jen Shaw?
Well, now I'm seeing that, yes, because that now that's becoming clear to me, like, oh, Heather is like shady lady.
Yeah, I think a lot of people thought she was going to have maybe a not so great season. And I don't know that I'm seeing her having like a really terrible season, but I also think, like,
I think it's just getting started.
Well, that's 100% could be the case. And I also think, like, her responses to Whitney during the most recent episode, the tail end of the episode, were tough. What did you think about that dynamic and fight that they were having at the tail end of the episode?
I thought that it was really weird. I thought Heather was unfair. Whitney can be a little dense. Mm-hmm. But I thought that Heather was being really unfair. And I think she's really, like, blowing this, like, obituary thing up too much, you know? Like, she's just, I think that, you know, Lisa had to do what she had to do to, like, prove her point that she was not a piece of shit who, you know, was not cognizant of, like, you know, Heather's father's passing or something. So, I don't know. And I think that Heather wants blind loyalty from Whitney. And Whitney is like, and at first I thought Whitney was being like a shit stirrer and a pain in the ass at that, like, lingerie thing when they were all screaming at each other. But I do actually think that she's going through some real shit. And I do think that she was actually, you know, she was drunk. And so the trigger was worse, but I think she was really triggered by Heather, like, denying something, you know? And then Heather is, yeah, like, not, I don't know. Heather's having a time this season.
Well, the odd thing about that final scene and that fight between them that was so kind of, like, interesting to me was it felt like Whitney was talking to Heather and Heather was talking to the audience.
Yes.
So Whitney was saying, like, yes, like, we're friends, we're going through this thing, but I want to talk to you about how much what you did hurt me. And Heather is saying, you're going to say I'm a bad person to all of these people. I need to respond to that. It was like Heather thinking of the final edit and Whitney thinking, I need to talk to my friend, which is, like, not actually fair to me to even say that, because obviously they both understand this is being filmed for reality TV, but
some people are more intuitive about it. Like for instance, like, Tamara is, like, really knows what she's doing with that kind of a thing, you know? So I get that. Like, you're totally right. That is exactly what it was like. Cause it didn't seem like Heather was hearing anything that Whitney was saying. You know?
Yeah, which I would think if I was Whitney, wouldn't that compound the feeling of upset?
Yeah.
Of, like, this person should be able to take in critique without leaving the room?
Yeah.
Is that, but I don't even know if that's, like, it felt like Heather was gassed up before
they started recording. Did she throw her mic back again?
I think she did. I feel like I remember her. Yeah, I think that there was that. And it's also, like, how much of this fight with Whitney, the literal fight that we saw took place, started in her mind 15 minutes before.
Yeah. You're right.
Like, I mean, has your perception of Heather changed at all?
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Just from this most recent episode. Because at first I was like, oh, Whitney's just being annoying, like, at the lingerie thing, and, like, she's trying to implicate Heather in something. She's drunk, she doesn't know what she's saying, blah blah blah. But then when I'm seeing, like, Heather invite, like, had Angie go to the choir thing and was, like, super not considerate of Jen's feelings about that, that's, like, I know she doesn't give a shit about Lisa Barlow, but with Jen being very upset about it, it's like what is going on? Why do these people like Angie? What's up with that? And Jen tried to insinuate that it's because Angie has a lot of money and will take them on a yacht or something. When you live in Salt Lake City, do you have a yacht? Can you have a yacht on a lake?
I mean, I don't know that her yacht is, like, behind their snow cabin, but I do think that we're being led to believe that she has a fucking shit ton of cash. I mean, if I was anyone in Salt Lake City, I'd be like, I need your 1099 before we go on that trip, because I don't want to be shot. I don't want to be hashtag shot exposed again. But
exactly.
It does seem like it's very in the way that society has been used on some franchises as the, like, she's well known and she's whatever, mm-hmm. it feels like Salt Lake is more explicitly about cash.
Yes, totally. Yes.
I don't know why that is.
Because it's new money, like very new money. Mm. That's what it seems like. And also, like, is there, there's not really, like, I mean, I guess there is probably, like, society there, but it's not, like, society, like, how there's society in, like, New York, where there's people who aren't actors or musicians that are in the paper, that are in Page Six, you know? I don't know. Like, I just, I mean, maybe they have their own version of Page Six out there.
I mean, I think I'm just thinking of other versions of Page Six, which would be like so fun to see in communities. But like in Salt Lake, I think so much of the culture and probably power and control for many of these women came through their relationships with the church and with their Church of Latter-day Saints community. And I would think for Heather, having lost a lot of that because she left the church because of her divorce and everything else, to look at someone, I don't know. I think you could find this in any number of different religions, but like in ones where tithing is very explicit, I would think that someone putting up a larger 10% or whatever the percentage is of your income would be looked at with a lot of respect. Mm-hmm. Like, and again, this isn't to me specific to the Mormon religion, but to many different forms of religion in which financial giving is a framework of one's duty and obligation and faith, that to think of the Harringtons, for example, who are, we're being told have enormous wealth or what, or enormous rich rather, I wonder if there's some connection there when it comes to like the way that they are seen as good. Mm-hmm. Maybe being connected to like their financial acumen or something. Does that make any sense? I think there's like a double hander here with Heather trying to find her identity and her friendships and relationships, assuming that she has lost many of them as a result of leaving the church, and also the way that wealth is viewed.
Yeah.
Both of which could maybe steer her in the direction of someone like Angie Harrington.
Okay. I mean, and maybe she wants Angie's, like, I mean, it might be a thing where she wants, like, Angie's group of girlfriends to go to Beauty Laser, Beauty Spa. What is it called? Beauty Laser and Spa or
beauty,
whatever?
Beauty Lab and Laser.
Beauty Lab and Laser.
I mean, I think that, I think that, like, you know, networking is a part when you are an adult human person, and especially for Heather, being a single mom, supporting her kids, and being a successful business person, I'm sure that's a, I don't know that it is any different from any of these other women with business, Meredith Marks wanting these people to shop at her store or wear mm-hmm. her weird jewelry. Like, P.S., did you notice that when both Whitney and Heather did their like Stardust rings, those were Meredith Marks rings?
No.
They're like $8,500 diamond rings. I looked at them.
Shut up. Are you serious?
I know. I was like, that looks like costume, but okay.
Yeah. I thought that they were just some like whatever rings. Wow.
So did I know.
Did Meredith give those as gifts to them or?
Couldn't tell you, but I love that they call them the Stardust because I think that was like the name of the ring.
Wow. Oh my God.
Like Pave Diamond, which, you know, everybody's got their vibe.
Yeah.
That's Meredith. Do you think that there's a way for Whitney and Heather to see each other that could come from them truly finding middle ground? Or how do you think this could move forward, noting that obviously, as we know, the end of the story, it does not?
Here's the thing. I've noticed that on every single franchise of this show, tight relationships last for two seasons. And then in the third, I'm serious. And then in the third season,
you're right,
it falls apart. So Bethany and Jill, Bethany and Carol, Kyle and Lisa, Lisa and Brandy. Let's see what else. Because by the third season, Lisa had really taken a Brandy and Kyle was like really kind of like on the outs.
Tamara and Vicky?
Tamara and Vicky. They, I mean,
that's true.
Yes, they were off and on and off and on. They would be like, okay. It'd be like very, very tight and then a fight and then tight and then a fight. Gretchen.
Teresa and Jacqueline.
Gretchen and Tamara. Mm. Teresa mm-hmm. and Jacqueline. Melissa and Teresa. Melissa, Teresa and Danielle. who else?
What do you think it is about the Atlanta? Third season?
Candace and Monique.
In Potomac, Candy and Kim, maybe in Atlanta.
Nene and Kim.
Nene and Kim.
Yeah.
What is it about the third season that changes a friendship or leads to a fracture?
I think that it's after a couple of years of watch. Like after the first season, you do see what people say behind your back and you're like, okay, taking it in stride. And then you go into the next season, you kind of forget about that and you're friends again and blah, blah, blah. And then you see all that shit behind your back happen again and you're like, what the fuck? And then things just start eating at you and it just kind of erodes the relationship. That's what I think. Leanne and Deandra.
Mm.
Stephanie and what's Brandy. The redhead? Brandy. But then Brandy. They came back around.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that it like the friendship is irrevocably broken.
Yeah.
But it does show an enormous fracture that's taking place.
Yes. And I think that that's true, though, with a lot of friendships anyway. Like, you know, I think if you don't have a fracture at some point, there, like, because sometimes, like, there's, I forget what it's called. It's like a certain type of art. I think it's Japanese and I think it has to do with ceramics.
Yes.
But it's like when something is broken and you put it back together, it like makes it more beautiful in a way. So I think that's an element with things. But then there, of course, are women who just never speak to each other again.
And with Heather and Whitney, I mean, obviously there is something for them to fight for because they have told us, again, it's like any kind of friendship on Housewives is a little bit performative because it's for cameras. Mm-hmm. But like, there obviously is a lot of love there. Is it realistic that they can focus more on the love, or how do you process anger with someone who you, I would think, want to remain close with?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Heather's going to have to figure it out because Jen's not going to be around next year. And because Andy indicated already that he said something like the relationship is over with Jen. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a weird way to say it. Like, because the relationship was not over with Teresa. Is it just because Jen's crimes seem way more egregious?
I think so. I think also Teresa's crimes were what she Joe's. Pled guilty. I mean, well, Teresa's crimes were more passive. I think Joe knew what he was doing.
Yes. Well, tell me. I totally believe that Teresa had no idea. I totally believe she was just signing things that he told her to. And that's just how it was going. And yeah, she stuck her head in the sand, but like she just trusted him to do that. And, you know, a lot of people like, I've had even my like business, my financial advisor will just give me papers that I have to sign and I sign them and maybe I should be reading them over, but I trust him that he's doing what's best for me. And, you know, I don't understand a lot of legalese and contracts and shit like that when it comes to like mortgages and all that other crap. Like, I didn't read through all my mortgage papers. It was like really dense. So I totally believe that Teresa did not know. But like Jen, it's like another story. And she did plea, right? Like what was she ended up pleaing out, right, Jen?
But yeah, she hasn't been sentenced yet. She hasn't been sentenced yet, but she had to say in court that, like, she did these things. Like, the judge went through line by line of, like, you're saying that you did this and you're saying that you did this. And it's a long process. It's not just like, oh, I'm changing my plea. Goodbye. Like, passivity of guilt, I think, matters here. And I think the fact that it wasn't even, like, LOL federal charges. It was this person who's being accused of being at the top.
Stealing from grannies.
Level. Stealing from grannies, but also doing this for however many years, for however many millions, and being in charge of it, that's really fucking her. Like, it's not even that she's doing these things at a lower level of knowledge. She was at the top of the pyramid which is a hard thing for Bravo to have to ignore. But I don't know that she's going to, I think the question a lot of people have, or at least I have, is like, when Andy said that, he also said he would be interested potentially in having a one-on-one sit down with her. Does that mean she's not going to be at the reunion?
That's what I want to know too, but she must. They, I mean, contractually, right?
I think they changed the contract. I think that, I don't think that they need her in the way that they, it's not a normal situation of like Mary Cosby not showing up at the reunion, which is in and of itself slightly abnormal. I think that this is like, you, we don't want you as a part of this anymore.
Though then there'll only be four people. It'll be like Real Housewives of New Jersey season two reunion.
I don't know that they need more than four for this reunion cycle. I think that maybe Angie might be there for a little bit for us to shit on and then leave. But I think the biggest example of their disinterest in having Jen as a part of present time marketing and like showmanship is the fact that they didn't want her at BravoCon, even after she herself flew in.
She flew. I didn't know about this. I was out of town when during BravoCon. So she flew in on her own dime, and then
she flew in on her own dime. Tamara talked about it at the girls trip reunion panel, which I was at, as well as Salt Lake City, and apparently was either staying with Heather or I don't know what, but was in town, was hoping to sort of surprise people at the panel. We had heard the day of the Salt Lake City panel she was in town because people had seen her out. I thought it was going to be a surprise. She was going to make a surprise appearance at BravoCon. She didn't. And allegedly, according to somebody somewhere, she tried to get in one of the cars to go to Legends Ball or one of the Watch What Happens, and they told her she was not welcome. Like,
okay, all right, that's different.
Which to me is like the most glaring example of, you would think she wouldn't want to be there because of her sentencing coming up and what, like, yeah, what she could say. But it's the opposite. They don't, they do not want her as a part of this, which to me is like, oh, okay, she really literally might not be with the, they could do a part three maybe at the reunion, and the third part is her and Andy one-on-one.
Yeah, that's possible. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Which would be,
what do you
tough
think she's going to get? I think she's not going to get anything less than 5 years.
I think she's going to get close to a decade. I think she's going to get like 8 to 10, 9 to 11.
Wow.
How could she not? This is like huge.
With federal, you can't get out early, right? Like you just,
no,
you do,
I think
the
that
time
was the whole thing with Teresa. Like Teresa, I don't, from what she, from how she has described things, and I believe her, she genuinely, even if someone had like said this to her, I think she blocked it out. Which I don't begrudge her for, but like, I don't think Teresa understood that pleading guilty, she really could be sentenced to jail, yeah, and would not, you cannot, to my understanding, you can't appeal it. When you've changed your plea for this, it's like you're accepting the consequences,
oh, yeah,
of,
yeah,
what,
yeah,
is about to go down. I don't think that Jen's going to be able to do anything once she's been sentenced, but I think the sentencing is going to be pretty tough. Because they didn't need, they weren't getting anything from her. Like, it's not like she could churn the way Stewart did. Like, they didn't need anything from her because they were coming for her. Everybody else, yeah, had already turned.
Yeah. I think that she ended up pleading because I think she realized that she was fighting a losing battle, that the prosecution rate in New York federal court is extremely high, and that they don't even bother to bring a case unless they have a like real solid case, because you know it's a lot of money to be wasting. And I think that she realized that she was basically spending her children's future on on this losing battle, and that I think that's why she kind of threw in the towel. Or I mean, that's just my guess.
It's like she's spending her children's future, but she's also really spending like her victim's past.
Oh, you're, I mean, right. It's true.
Like, I don't know that they were really saving for their kids' future, and whose money were they saving if they were? There is a reason, yeah, she didn't own property. She was just fucking shitting money that she was burning.
Why didn't she own property? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Was it because she didn't want something to be taken? Was she like hiding her money somewhere? It just, the whole thing is so crazy. I want to know like more about it. I'm actually really, really sad that it's not going to trial because I really wanted to like watch it.
It was in my Google Cal. I was like,
do you know when her sentencing is?
We're in November. I think it's, oh my God, I think it's December maybe. I think it's after Thanksgiving, but I could be wrong. I could 100% be wrong. What did you think of Jen's anger and angst this episode and sort of this?
She's always like that.
But like through the lens of like, you're not a good friend to me in my time of need, which is what she seems to be saying about Heather.
Oh, she's saying, yeah, I mean, but she's always saying that. Like, she's always, like, she was doing that when her dad died, but her dad had died, like, way before. But that's her whole thing that she does. She's always doing that, and she's always, like, whenever I picture her, like, screaming and yelling at people, I mostly picture her at when it was a coach's birthday party where she was, like, dressed like Beyonce in, like, a long-sleeve bathing suit. You know what I mean? Like, with crystals all over it. And she's, like, stomping around. She's, like, so little. She's, like, a ball, you know? Like, she's, like, so tiny and just, like, screaming and, like, ah! Like, that's how I think of her in my head. Like, that's her aura to me. So, like, seeing her stomping around and yelling, it's, like, okay, this is what she does. Like, screaming in a bathtub at Whitney, right? That's who she was screaming at in that bathtub, right? Remember? They took baths somewhere. Outdoor baths.
It was Heather. Oh, yeah. Was Whitney there, too? I don't even remember, honestly. I really couldn't tell you. It feels like generations ago.
Yeah.
That took place. It really does. So how do you feel about the current fracture within Lisa and Meredith, which wasn't so much a part of this episode, but obviously is kind of bubbling underneath the surface here?
Yeah, I think that that's never going to get fixed. I think that it's going to be different. Like, I think that Meredith will be cordial and will allow herself to have fun with Lisa and will, you know, but I don't think that beyond filming that they're going to have much of a relationship. And I don't think that, I think Meredith like knows that she can't trust her now. And so, I mean, I would be absolutely on the defensive. Like, after that rant that she did, like, that was wild. But, you know, I still love Lisa Barlow. I can't help but love her.
What is it about her?
I don't know. She's so ridiculous.
I feel the same.
I don't know. Maybe I relate to burritos and Kit Kats. I'm not sure. But, like...
You guys could bond over cheesecake.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I do love Taco Bell. I don't eat it often, but when I do, I like relish it.
You know, I've been a vegetarian for 150 years, but even before that, I think I had only had Taco Bell once. I hated it.
Vegans love it. Because you can get vegan stuff there.
I'm like gagging on the inside even thinking about it. There's something about it that's so deeply overprocessed, and it's like so. And as someone who like loves actual Mexican food, I'm like, this is an aberration. Like
It's a different thing.
So processed.
I don't even think of it as Mexican food. The Dorito tacos are so good. It's meat inside of a Dorito.
It's meat in a chip. It's literally meat in a... Oh, my God. That makes me want to die. What would you like to see happen with Whitney and Heather? What's, like, your ideal best-case scenario?
Oh, they'll get back to... Heather is a very forgiving person. If she can forgive Jen, then she can forgive Whitney, you know?
But we're not seeing that. We're seeing her forgive Jen... Do you think it's because she has higher expectations for Whitney? She thinks that Whitney is more of like a literal person.
Maybe.
Not a cartoon.
But I mean, Jen called her Shrek.
Yeah.
So like that's rough. I think after she's watched these episodes, she might be able to see it a little clearer, you know? It must be really crazy to like have these really intense conversations and intense feelings about stuff and then be able to watch it and then hear these like talking head interviews of the person that you were talking and then you get to hear more of like what's going on with them. Like it must really change your perception of or interpretation of events that happen in your life. So I mean I have no idea what that feels like, but it must be I don't know, substantial, right?
I would think maybe the opposite. Like it deepens your frustration or upset because you're seeing the person not only share to you how they feel, but likely double down in the confessional. And usually in the confessional, it's much, much sharper. It's yeah. guided to be that way. And it's also like your innermost id coming out. Like I would think if you're already feeling defensive about your behavior being misconstrued, as I think Heather might feel right now, I would think at this point she's just really, really pissed. Because I think as Heather was, you know, it was like the proscenium stage, like as she was watching Whitney say to the world that Heather was a bad friend slash bad person, in Heather's mind, I would think watching these episodes and watching Whitney expand on that in confessionals would probably increase the divide.
Maybe. Okay. The way that I am, just from watching home movies, when I watch myself, I'm like, ugh, shut up. So, like, I think that if I saw, like, fight, I think my like, go-to would be, like, oh, my God, Tracy, shut up. And I would, like, maybe I would see things a little differently. I don't know.
Well, but I also think you're probably open to that. I don't know that, like, any of these women are really open to, like, growth or listening to each other.
That's true.
as being the priority over defending each other to each other, you know?
I mean, Andy said that what makes a perfect housewife is a woman who has strong opinions about how she lives her life and about how others should live theirs, which is, you know, when they have strong opinions about how other people should live their lives, then it's hard to, you know, back down from that.
I think that's also why Salt Lake is like giving this season, because they all obviously have very strong opinions about each other. It really is kind of working out in our favor right now.
I did not ever think that Salt Lake was going to be, first of all, this diverse, although this season is less diverse than previous seasons. And I think that was like no fault of the producers. I did think that they had, what was her name, Jenny? I think that they really were going to bring her back before all that shit, you know, popped up. Because that's why there's only five women this year. But I didn't think it would be, I didn't think I would love it this much. Salt Lake City and Potomac are the two shocking, like if you had come to me and said, this is where we're going to do Housewives seasons, I'd be like, oh, like a boring, because like Potomac's just an extension of DC, you know, so but they're my favorites.
And you know, we talk about, listen, Beverly Hills gets bananas ratings, whatever, blah blah blah, and it's the glitz and glamour and diamonds and rose. New York City, we've got the vibe, we've got the energy. You think of these places because they're the big cities, but I love to be surprised in the ways that we have been about like smaller communities, or you know, big communities that we just, some of us might not know about. Like I truly didn't know anything about Salt Lake City. I wouldn't have been able to tell you where Potomac was located. It's like the idea of like, what is it, the fucking East Coast West Coast like bubble or whatever, that is a thing that exists for a lot of people. And I say that as somebody from Rhode Island, but even as a Rhode Islander, I'd be like, I don't know if there's like, if there's people living this, like that kind of life in Rhode Island. I don't know where, not really Newport, like maybe, I don't know, Barrington, like aspects of Providence. Like I would be surprised if they did a Real Housewives of whatever in my state, because that's not necessarily my community. That's what's been so invigorating about this, is like the ways that Bravo has surprised us and kind of opened us up, even through like the superficial lens of like, oh my God, they got a fucking ton of cash over there, like holy shit. And like storytelling too, it is like a little bit of a opener to a lot of people who are so used to kind of stereotypical ideas of where storytelling exists and where escapism can exist.
I mean, wait, oh, real quick before, I know
we've been talking for a long time.
I did love Beverly Hills this season. I thought it was so much better than previous seasons, just because of I feel like maybe I felt very invested in the Garcelle son thing. You know what I mean? Like, and of course we are personally invested in the Diana Jenkins thing, as we were sent cease and desist.
You were sent a cease and desist. Shout out to me not having yet received one. God bless. But she did name me in court documents.
Oh no, I didn't. I never received it. That's like the joke of it is that she took a picture and then never sent. I never got it. I never got it.
Did Jezebel? Did you follow up with anybody at Jezebel? Did they ever get it?
Yeah, no, they didn't get it. That's weird. Okay, I'm pretty sure. And then and I should ask my friend Lars if she got hers. But yeah, I was very invested in that whole thing of, you know, the off-screen stuff on Beverly Hills was feeding into the on-screen stuff, and I loved that. And I loved all the Kathy Hilton shit and the Lisa Rinna. I don't know what they're going to do for next season, but I heard rumors about them approaching Lisa Vanderpump, and I think that is very interesting. Sometimes you, like, with Tamara, like, and Heather Dubrow, sometimes you, and your Wi-Fi, your modem or whatever it's called, your Wi-Fi router, mm-hmm. you have to unplug it and then plug it back in for it to work. You just need a reboot.
Oh my God. You know, Andy said recently at something, and it might have been during like a Q&A at something, that there was some sort of thing sort of skirting this a little bit, but like I don't see that happening. Like he didn't see, I think, Lisa Vanderpump returning. I think it would make a lot of sense for Lisa to return. It would make a lot of sense for everyone for Lisa to return, especially if Rinna was back, because if Kathy had like Vanderpump in her corner,
Kathy in her corner.
100%. It would be a very interesting dynamic, but I don't know that is going to happen right now. Even though if I was Vanderpump, I'd be like, yeah, let me get back on that fucking show. Like, let's make that happen. But with Rinna, do you want Rinna to return? Which I know is a loaded question, but here I go.
Yeah,
anyway.
I don't really know the answer to that because she has been annoying me for seasons now, like several seasons. Yeah. Thing is that she does bring it. She brings it. Mm-hmm. She does the dirty thing that no one else wants to do and, you know, and brings it. So in that respect, yeah, I do want to see her back, but I don't know. I don't know. I also think that Erica's story wouldn't be as interesting without Lisa to be, because if Erica didn't have Lisa, the other women wouldn't be like that nice to her. You know what I mean? Lisa's the one that's like the nicest to her. So I feel like Lisa makes Erica feel comfortable enough to talk about all of this shit and to be an asshole, really. Like, I mean, Erica was just such like a complete asshole this last season. and I never liked Erica. She only got interesting to me once all this shit started happening to her, like when shit got real. Because I think she was just being phony before.
How surprised were you when the whole thing about Tom came out?
Not surprised at all. I remember at the first BravoCon, we were walking from the one venue to the other, and we were with a group of people. And we were all talking about like Dorit and PK, and I was like, "Yeah, people say that about."
Oh my god! Wait, I feel like I remember this. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
People say that about Dorit and PK, but I think that like the real money issue is like Tom and Erica. Like he has a couple lawsuits that are not settled and like I don't know lawyers that have private jets like that, and I was like, I think something big is gonna happen to them, and it's ended up being a lot bigger than I thought it was gonna be, but like it just didn't smell right. It just didn't seem right, and I felt the same way about Jen Shaw too.
Well, I also have to say, for anyone who's not following you on social, you do so many incredible deep dives. I mean, Jamila Thank Jamil you. Every day of her life is absolutely shaking. Like on the B scale of 1 to 10 Bs, and you guys, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you fucking Google Tracy Morrissey and Jamila Jamil. My God, or go to her IG immediately. If there was a situation, circumstance, or question that you had of like, what's the thing that I really want to get more information on, or what's the person who I like have a weird vibe about, is there a Bravo Leb or someone who comes to mind, or someone outside of Bravo? My God, like, is there someone who you have ... thoughts about or questions about?
Let me think. I mean, yeah, Yeah. I don't know. There are people who like have, I don't know. Sometimes it just like comes to me, like, mm-hmm. like with Dane Cook announcing his engagement with that woman who is much, much, much younger. And then when I just started like going into his Instagram and then looking at all these other very young women on his Instagram that were at parties years ago. I mean, I'm talking 14 years old, some of the girls. That really like piqued my interest. And that was like something where I just like started going crazy. And I had never even thought about Dane Cook before that. So, like, I don't know. Sometimes there'll be things that pop up. But so far, right now, who's shady? I don't know. I feel like the call outs of like the shady money thing. I feel like so right now, those have been called out already. I don't think there's anything else shady going on in Beverly Hills. I feel like Dorit and PK will always have some kind of like shit, but I don't really understand. Yeah, but like it's not on the level that Tom Girardi's was at. It's not on like PK had like bad gambling debts, like that were like in the millions, but not in the tens of millions. Right. Tom Girardi allegedly stole tens of millions of dollars from people, like victims, actual victims, people who like that guy who got burned, who almost was burned alive. That was nuts. His girlfriend died. That like all of those. That was a great little documentary that ABC News did
on Hulu.
Yeah.
I love the Hustler and the Housewife, I want to say.
Yes. Right? Was yes. that the one that it was? Yeah. Or the Housewife and the Hustler. Something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that there were, I mean, my God, there have been a couple at this point. I think it's also the difference between losing money and stealing it. What? Tell me.
I know who I want to look into. Louis. Teresa's husband. Something's up there, right? Because he doesn't work. He doesn't have a job.
He did say at his reunion. I'm pretty sure, right? He did lose his job from Housewives. He joins that illustrious group.
But he also, I don't know what he had been doing before, because I know he had some kind of like marketing, quote unquote marketing, mm-hmm. and that marketing is such an umbrella that it's like, you don't know what it could possibly be. Because Jen said she was in marketing. So he had sold that company, but I think he had been pushed out. That's what I heard from a little source. But yeah, I should look into that guy because something's not right there. And I want everything to it would be great if she had like a happily ever after. I don't know about that. Also, she's a dark character, like to shit on your brother like that. Although she was apparently on some podcast with like some producer of the show start a podcast, a former producer.
So I think she had Carlos King on her podcast and she was also on his, and he was her producer on the Real Housewives of New Jersey. He was like her literal producer.
And he was saying that he was basically validating all the stuff about how Joe and Melissa were really just trying to get on the show, and that Joe was just making a big stink at the funeral because he was trying to have like a Teresa moment of flipping the table. And I mean, Joe does love being a house husband more than any other person, more than Frank Catana, anybody. That's what he loves.
I mean, it is a reel to be continued.
Yeah, totally.
I need to have you back ASAP. We've been talking for 800 hours. I'm so thankful. Thank you so much for coming back on. I cannot believe we talked about Bethany Frankel for a literal hour and I haven't even listened
to that
fucking podcast
episode. I could talk longer.
I could talk to you literally all day. There's nothing I want to do more, Tracy Morris. You know I'm obsessed with you. Tell the AGs where they can follow you on social, and also note that a lot of the deep dives that you've done are saved to your highlights on IG, right?
So on
people
Instagram,
can like look through. The Dane Cook thing is so dark and so scary and weird. So like, you know, guys, like gird your loins style before you check it out. It's very intense, but I'm really glad that you did that deep dive. Tell people where they can follow you, all that good stuff. Listen to Pot Psychology.
Pot Psychology is available wherever you listen to podcasts. I do deep dives on there too, on weird things like Elliot Smith's death and Desiree Jennings. She was
Death?
Elliot Smith. And I don't believe it was suicide. So I have an episode about that and with a lot of court documents and stuff. Anyway, you can follow me online, Tracy Morrissey, Tracy with an IE on everything, and pipedreams.fun. Listeners of Andy's Girls, if you put in the discount code AG2022, you can get 20% off your purchase.
Oh my God, that's incredible. How long is that going to go on until?
Probably Black Friday.
Tracy Morrissey, you know I'm obsessed with you guys. You know what else I'm obsessed with? When you join the Andy's Girls Patreon, number one way to support the pod, you get exclusive bonus episodes and so much more. Satchel Spectacular is up now at patreon.com/Andy's Girls. And of course, Satchels of Gold, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Clorne Ben Simone. And P.S., I guess Bethany also took ownership or credit for Satchels of Gold being a thing.
Did she?
Kelly said, I have to listen to that fucking episode. Guys, Satchels of Gold are your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns about all things housewives. Follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley and slide into my DMs with your Satchels of Gold. You might hear them featured on an upcoming Patreon episode. My God, Tracy Morrissey, thank you for coming on this 18-hour episode.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my God. We literally, in the words of Bethany Frankel, mentioned it all, and I'm so appreciative to you for all of your time and intelligence, all that and more. Guys, hope you're all doing okay, and we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.